Yes, and welcome to Law Matters for another fortnight. Good to have your company here on 100.9 FM Noongar Radio. Jodie Hoffman with you for the next hour. And big shout out to our listeners, wherever you are, listening in through Kununurra. Welcome to the program through Warringarri Media. The mob at 6DBY in Derby, hello. And a shout out to our listeners around the country through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Always a pleasure to bring this program to you, produced and presented by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. We've been on air for 15 years on this station now, and always good to keep you up to date with law and justice issues in this state, let you know about your rights, let you know about what's happening in the community. And a big focus in the second half of our program today on youth issues. You would have been hearing a lot of news come out of Kununurra, extra police on the ground to look at what's happening there with our young people. We're going to be looking at the importance that programs and justice reinvestment play in our communities, and we're going to find out about an exciting program called the John Moriarty Foundation Football Program. It is really kicking goals around the country, giving our kids something to do, something to get involved in, and changing lives, which is the really important thing. So we're going to be talking to a woman by the name of Alira Toby, joining us from Cairns in sunny Queensland, to find out more about that program for our young mob. Also going to be talking to Sasha Greenoff, who is the statewide manager for the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA with the Youth Engagement Program. Now, the Youth Engagement Program provides holistic, culturally secure, individualised and flexible support to clients appearing in the Perth, Broome, Derby, Kununurra, Wyndham, Halls Creek and Fitzroy Crossings Children's Courts. It already happens at country locations, including the East and West Kimberley, but has been loaded out to Geraldton very recently as well. So great news for Geraldton young people and their families and our communities. But our first guest on the program today, we'll be talking about a very significant event that happened yesterday. Shortly on the program, I'll be speaking to WA Governor, the Honourable Chris Dawson. Now, the last time we spoke to Chris Dawson on this program was when he was the WA Police Commissioner, but it hasn't been in that role for a few years now. But a shout out to everyone in Pinjarra. A very significant day yesterday for our people. The Governor attended a ceremony on the banks of the Murray River and apologised for the Pinjarra massacre, Pinjarra, that happened in 1834. A brutal and unrelentless massacre. And I'm keen to know what the Governor said to the community members that were there. I know they do gather in remembrance every year, and the apology, I'm sure, went down very well. So looking forward to speaking with the Governor, the Honourable Chris Dawson, shortly here on the program.
Hello, it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to me to go over everything. They say the time's supposed to heal ya, but I ain't done much healing. Hello, can you hear me? I'm in California dreaming about who we used to be when we were younger and free. I've forgotten how it felt before the world fell at our feet. There's such a difference between us and a million miles. Hello from the other side. I must have called a thousand times to tell you I'm sorry for everything that I've done. But when I call you, never seem to be home. Hello from the outside. At least I can see that I've tried. Tell you I'm sorry
matter. It clearly doesn't tear you apart anymore. Hello, how are you? It's so typical of me to talk about myself. I'm sorry. I hope that you're well. Did you ever make it out of that town when nothing ever happened? It's no secret that the both of us are running out of time. So hello from the other side. I must have called a thousand times to tell you I'm sorry for everything that I've done. But when I
That's Isaiah and hello here on the Law Matters program, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Thank you for your company. A shout out to our community members in Pinjarra. For our national audience who are not aware, Pinjarra is approximately, I think it's about 82 k's south of Perth on the way down to more beautiful Noongar country. And we're talking about a very significant event that happened this week, an apology delivered by the WA Governor, the Honourable Chris Dawson. It's no surprise or revelation to our mob across the country that with colonisation came frontier wars. And here in Western Australia, we had our fair share of them, right up in the north of the state, right down in the south, and a lot of places in between. The Pinjarra massacre, approximately an hour of Perth, was a brutal attack on our people that occurred on the 28th of October back in 1834. The massacre was a large-scale attack on an unsuspecting group of Noongar men, women and children, and was led by the then Governor, James Stirling, WA's first Governor in fact. Yesterday was the 191st anniversary of the killings on the banks of the Murray River. And my next guest stood on those grounds and apologised for the actions of his predecessor. To Law Matters, welcome WA Governor, the Honourable Chris Dawson. Thanks for coming into the studio, Chris. How
Thanks
are you?
Thanks for the invitation, Jodie.
Firstly, my first comment is that I know that community members in Pinjarra do gather in this significant site to remember those who've fallen over the years and look back on those days after colonisation. How were you received when you turned up on the banks of the Murray and there was 300 to 400 local people there?
So I've been there before when I was in Noongar language, when I was Monarch, as a police commissioner, and that had been at their invitation. But, of course, I've now been governor for 3 years, and important for me, before I sort of expand on it, I was there at the invitation of the Bindera Noongar mob, and it's important that I didn't just go there asking to talk. They have been calling out for truth for 191 years, and when I took on the role as governor, this was one of the most key things I thought I would have to try and better understand what should happen with this. So yesterday was a really important day. Yes, there was a bit of emotion, but really essentially it was one at the invitation of the people there, and then secondly, it was about telling the truth.
Who attended that?
So we had I'd say just over 300-odd people. We had the traditional owners there, and so, you know, the old Marmans and Yorgas, the old people were there. Mm. Sadly, some who have been carrying this for generations have passed, but those that were there yesterday were young, and they were also old. Everyone in between. So it was good to see the families come together. Mm-hmm. Then we had others that actually came in from outside. You know, there were Wadjuk people and, you know, Menang and a whole bunch of people who'd come in. But essentially, I'd say, from what I could observe and recognise, mainly Noongar people, but a lot of them were local Pinjarra, Bindra mob. And we also had, and I was pleased to see, the Shire President and councillors. We had people from Department of Fire and Emergency Services. We had half a dozen Aboriginal sailors from Fleet Base West. Mm. They have been really staunch in attending and helping clear up the area every year as well, and attending in respect. So, and also great to see the local school kids there as well, because they are there on part of a education journey. So there was a very broad range of people there.
Describe the surroundings for us, Governor, because it must have been very emotional being at the spot where the massacre has taken place all those years ago, and surrounded by, you know, direct descendants of the Governor then, James Stirling. Describe for our national audience what the environment is like.
So you've accurately described where it is location-wise, but it's still in a pretty pristine bush setting. There's no buildings around the actual site itself, and that's a good thing that it's been kept there as a sacred site. But the river itself is a classical river that, you know, floods and runs strong in winter, but it is got steep banks, it's got lots of fallen trees and logs. And when I walked down there with the TOs, and I went down there previously prior to today, and you could see and sadly visualise the descriptions that I read in the original journals, it's pretty well the same as it was a couple hundred years ago. So it's sacred, but it's also, it's got a serenity about the place as well, that is pretty well untouched.
You were invited there by local community members. You did give the apology. It is on the 191st anniversary of that terrible massacre. How were you received during that apology? What were people doing? Were they with the silence?
They were quiet. Yeah. They were quiet. And Kerri-Ann Keering and her family, she led the welcome, and her daughter Jetta did provide a welcome. It was, while it was sombre, it was also, I think, just a really, and it sounds a bit of a cliche, but an authentic experience. There was no, it was coming from the heart, from the court, you know, and it was, yes, it was sombre, but at the same time, there was a great deal of anticipation. I'd been very clearly, and I've got my aide, who's a Noongar man, is an acting superintendent of police, and I'd asked him to go and speak to people before I went down. And we've been doing this for quite some time. This is not just a happen chance thing to go down there yesterday. So we'd been talking about what would be the appropriate thing and how should this be conducted. And really, it was attending at their invitation, but they were really, to be blunt, excited about the opportunity to have the truth told. And so they were very, very welcoming. And, yeah, I guess I'd describe it as a really sincere, and it sounds strange, both a sobering experience, but also elements of really excited that at least the truth is now being told. Mm. So you can't describe it as joyful, but they were just, I think, very, very pleased that the truth was coming out, because Stirling described this as a skirmish nearly 200 years ago. And then as, you know, historians started commenting on it, it was termed a battle. And then more latterly, people have described it as a massacre. And I wanted to actually get to the truth of the matter, and I'm happy to tell you how I arrived at that.
My guest is WA Governor, the Honourable Chris Dawson, joining us on Law Matters. The Governor this week spoke to over 300 members, community members at Pinjarra, 80 kilometres south of Perth, on the 191st anniversary of the Pinjarra massacre by the then Governor James Stirling, WA's first Governor. I saw a lot of the media footage. There was lots of tears. Mm. There was lots of hugs. Mm. In your current role as the WA Governor, but also in your former role as the WA Commissioner of Police Governor, are you surprised by the forgiveness of Aboriginal people despite everything that has been thrown our way over the last couple of hundred years?
Well, they've been very, very patient. I said when I was responding to some media questions yesterday, you know, as many younger people do, and I just reflect on my own journey, you know, I joined police 50 years ago. I used to do a lot of talking and much less listening. Mm. And the older I've got, the greyer I've got, the more I've realised I'm actually learning more by listening as opposed to talking. And yes, there were tears and yes, there were hugs, but the depth, I guess, of emotion was one that was very evident in the people that were inviting us there. Mm. And that's not something to be at all ashamed about because it is genuine. And it has been a generation by generation grieving. Mm. I wanted to make sure that we didn't just go in like had happened with Stirling. He armed 25 men. There was only one unarmed. Mm. And they came in at a charge and there was a tragedy. We walked in there, as I said in my speech, softly, at invitation, not armed, but to actually then tell the truth. And how did I get to that point? Look, as police commissioner, I knew about it, but when I got appointed as governor, in fact, one of the men that I asked to do the primary research, Tim Clark's here with us in the studio. His first day that he came on my staff, I said, look, I want you to get up to the state archives. Mm. I want to find out what was the original journals written and what did they say?
Yes.
Because I just don't want to pick a book up off a library, as good as academic research can be. Who were the, and I guess this is from my police background, who were the eyewitnesses and what are the primary sources? And you know, this is a lawyer. Contemporaneous notes are the best evidence in terms of any written records. And interestingly and importantly, the Surveyor General's the only unarmed member of that 25 group that Stirling led. He actually did write in a day journal his field notes, and he wrote very, very expressly about how this massacre occurred. And that very quickly, when I went up after the research papers were found, and there were some new papers found as well, it was very clear to me and anyone that reads them that this was not a skirmish. This was actually a punishment planned by the governor of the day. And I got asked questions yesterday, well, why are you doing this? And yes, we had, in fact, the Premier, unfortunately, was out of the country and unavailable, but he asked his Aboriginal Affairs Minister, Don Punch, to represent the state government. But I did say to the Premier and the Aboriginal Affairs Minister, look, this is actually, with respect, not a time for political speeches. Mm. It was led by a governor. This was before the state was even formed. It was still a colony. Mm. I think the governor, if anyone's going to be invited to talk, the person holding the office of governor has, and I my favourite four-letter word is one that starts with a D, duty. And I felt it's my duty to tell the truth as a governor, because it was a governor that led it. And this was different than other massacres around the country, because I've found no other record. There may be one, but I'd yet to find one where a governor, basically the head of the colony or the state, actually planned, led and executed a terrible tragedy. So that's why I felt it a personal duty in the office that I now hold. So it was different than the time I went there as police commissioner. I mean, part of the irony of it is, and the police commissioner, Cole Blanch, was also there yesterday, and that was important because the very first policeman who was actually wounded and died of his injuries was the only fatality on Stirling's side. And you'll know from the remarks yesterday and the records that Stirling said there were 15 Bindra killed. Rose said, well, up to 20, and others have gone as high as 80.
Yes.
So I said yesterday, we won't know the precise number after this passage of time, but the important thing is to tell the truth, that this was planned, it was a deadly massacre, and they used words like surrounded and overpowered, and they fired continuously for over an hour as the whole families were huddling and hiding in the river. And they used the term, and this is hard for people to hear, but it's what truth's about. They used terms like they picked them off. So this is not something to trivialise. This is a very, very, very serious fact and truth that needed to be told. And if I could just add to this, why tell the truth? Well, unless, and I reflect on what Pat Dodson said recently. He said, we need to acknowledge our foundations. If they're built on half-truths or only partial truths, how can we actually move forward from that? And this is what yesterday was about. I expressed yesterday, you can't tie a ribbon around this and say, well, that's all done now. You know, the Pinjarra thing's all finished. It's not. What it means, I think it's an important marker to actually get it on the record that it was wrong and it was a massacre. But secondly, we can then grow together and heal. And that is really what reconciliation's about. Reconciliation's a long word, but it's a long journey. And I think the journey is one where the steps that were made yesterday are important to continue. It doesn't mean, well, that part of it's all done. It means that you can move forward and heal. I would like a message to your listeners to say, you know, it's very easy to actually be silent. It's a more comfortable thing for anyone. If it's a difficult message to tell, doesn't mean you shouldn't say it. It's easier to sort of sit back and go, well, let others do it. I think as a nation, and I'll talk to everyone in the nation, that's Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal, how do we move forward unless, one, we tell the truth, but then how can we move forward? And I think the truth is an important part, but the journey must continue. And if I can reflect back, last November I was at Wadjimup, Rottnest Island, and I heard some elders talk direct. Now, I threw my speech away that day because they called out, and you may have been there yourself, but at that time I listened very carefully to one of the old elders from the Kimberley, and she said, talking to the younger people that were present, and there were several thousand at that one, where she said, don't let this grieving stay with your next generation and the generations before. This grief should stop with my generation. Now, that doesn't mean you forget and you erase the record. No, you don't forget. But this, as we know, intergenerational trauma is a real thing. So why are we wanting to not re-traumatise the present and the next and the future generations by a grieving which can be addressed by us working together as one nation of people, which can, in the symbolic exchange of trees, I use them as a real metaphor, because Stirling planted an olive tree a year after this massacre, and that tree is alive and it's growing still in Government House. And I thought, well, olives are an international sign of peace. Why don't I give them an olive tree grown from that tree, which we did. Importantly, the mob responded and said, well, we'll give you a jarrah tree. And we are going to now plant them in our respective places. But if I continue that healing process and restorative process, trees, when they grow, put their roots down in the soil. Both jarrah and olive trees grow for a long time. They're strong trees, but they grow well in Australian soil. And I think this is the beauty of this symbolism, is that you've got a European tree, that is, non-Aboriginal people have come to this country, and they can grow and they can actually be strong alongside our native jarrah tree. They grow out of the same soil, we live on the same country, and they can both be strong, and we can do this together. And that, I think, is the real beauty of yesterday. As we can move forward as a nation, don't just keep looking backwards, look forward. And I know, look, I haven't bothered looking at all the trolls on the social media, and there'll be plenty of them. Mm-hmm. I don't read social media because I think it just fills my head full of, you know, the bitterness that people sitting on keyboards do at times. Yes, there'll be positives as well. But we have to, I think, as a nation, say, like these trees, we are here together. Mm. Let's grow strong together. And we owe it to our present and our younger and our future generations to put these roots down together. We're not leaving our country to those people that just simply want to cause division. Let's do this together, and we will become even stronger. I still absolutely am committed that we live in the best country in the world. Well, let's grow stronger together.
Governor, you said as you get older, you listen more, talk less. Having been face-to-face with over 300 people in Pinjarra to deliver the apology for the massacre of the first Governor of Western Australia, James Stirling, how do you feel moving forward on a personal level about the glorification of people like Stirling through the naming of Governor Stirling High School, Stirling Gardens, Stirling Range, the city of Stirling, the statue of him from Hay Street in the city, which I think is in storage until the State Library is refurbished and then it gets returned. When you've come face to face with those community members, can you see how those names and those figures cause so much upset?
I can understand. At the same time, as governor, and this is not me sitting on a fence here, I appoint governments. Yes. as governor. So I recently spoke to the opening of Parliament. I think the proper place is having our elected representatives. They're the people that make the laws. Yes, I have to give royal assent if I agree to it. But the proper place, I think, is actually squarely with those people that we as a community of people elect and say, can you please represent me and what I stand for and represent my views? That's what our democracy is about. I think that is the proper place where consultation should occur, where people can say, okay, we're now at a point in our history where we better understand. Let our representatives, if there is a debate, that's where the debate should, I think, properly occur, because they're the people that are supposed to and do advocate for their constituents.
Yes.
And I think if the constituency, that is the people in our state, say that they want some reconsideration of names, as you've put it, then put it to your elected representative and say, can you please advance this for me? Now, I know you're ALS, so you advocate for people all the time. Yeah. But that's the proper process of advocacy. But if names have to be changed, well, there'll be acts of parliament, there'll be regulations. You know, I'm talking to a lawyer here, so, you know, this is a process which it cannot change unless the law changes. But, you know, there's plenty of opportunity. So I think, and I heard, in fact, Minister Don Punch, in fact, say, look, there's a consultation process that I think is open.
Oh, we'll watch that space. Governor, thank you for your time. And I know that for the people of Pinjarra, yesterday's delivery of the apology meant a lot. Therefore, I'm going to give you the last word on our interview today for the community of Pinjarra and any mob who weren't able to attend on that day, your message to them about how heartfelt it was for you.
Well, my message to them is one of thanks, because I was very conscious that I just didn't invite myself. Thank you that there was an opportunity as governor that I could represent what I felt was a very important thing to represent the state. And secondly, please see this as a marker of opportunity for healing. And that means that you actually really discuss and talk through how we can best do these things. And I heard the TOs yesterday talk about some of the things that could be done. And then, and only then, will, I think, further growth happen in terms of reconciliation. So I think there's much more steps that can be taken beyond this. And I would, I guess, in my last comment, just reinforce, please don't look backwards. Please step forward and don't be silent, because your voice is really important that we can actually grow together.
His Excellency, the Honourable Chris Dawson, Governor of Western Australia, thank you for your time on Law Matters.
Thanks, Jodie.
And you can see the whole speech given by the WA Governor on the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA Facebook page, or of course on the WA Government website. And I'm sure you'll find it very, very interesting to read all of the way through. And the hard copy version also has a commemorative pull-out poster from it as well. This is the Law Matters program. Very shortly, we're heading to Cairns in sunny Queensland, where I'll be talking all about the John Moriarty Foundation with Alira Toby, one of their ambassadors. Stay tuned. This is the Law Matters program.
Here I stand, facing the dark roads ahead of me. With this darkness comes over me. I'm still standing, waiting for this way of light to guide me the way. And my heart is frozen, I can't.
Okay, that was the Southeast Desert Metal Band and Send Me an Angel. Here on the Law Matters program, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Still got a lot to get through on the program today, and very good to have my next guest on the program. Welcome from Cairns in Queensland, Alira Toby from the John Moriarty Foundation. How are you, Alira? Thank you for your time.
I'm good. It's very hot here in Cairns, but I'm very good. How are you?
I'm very good. Look, I met John Moriarty himself quite a few years ago when he visited the Aboriginal Legal Service over here in Western Australia. He's quite an extraordinary man. For people who aren't aware, John Moriarty is a member of our Stolen Generations and was born in remote Borroloola in the Gulf of Carpentaria in the Northern Territory, taken from his mum at the age of four before spending time in a number of boys' homes in Adelaide and Sydney. Just another example of the resilience of our mob, and what he's gone on to do over the years is incredible as an artist, as a sporting star. Alira, you're an ambassador for the John Moriarty Foundation, and can you give us an overview of what the foundation is?
Yeah, the foundation is many things, but I think at the core of it, you know, we're a holistic program that delivers football programs out in remote communities. I think we're across 18 of them in New South Wales, Queensland and Northern Territory. So, you know, we touch base from, you know, wellbeing, health and nutrition, and also just having fun kicking a soccer ball around, which is, I guess, why we're all there and what we love to do. So that's pretty much what we do in the core of everything that we do at the foundation.
I want to know firsthand from you as an ambassador and someone who's involved in the programs run by the Moriarty Foundation, what impact it has when our young people get involved in programs like this?
I mean, our impact is pretty large, and, you know, we've just got a Deloitte report back, and you know, we've had 95% of our educators indicate that, you know, students who attend JMS are more likely to actually attend school 1 to 2 more days than they normally do, which is great to speak to what our coaches do on the ground and what we love to deliver. And, you know, we take pride in making sure that our kids, you know, are getting education and are getting to school, but also staying in school, and our program really does deliver on that.
You know, there are such important programs like the one you're working with that are life-changing for our young people. There's so many things that work, and it's not rocket science, is it, that if you get into our communities and have a holistic approach and work not just with the kids but with their families, the effects are incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable, and we're very lucky that we are actually community-led. So all of the decisions that we make and all of the steps that we take in our clubs and our communities are actually driven from our CAG group, who are community members in each of the communities that we work in. So we're very lucky to be trusted in those spaces and have the ability to be able to work with the kids and the communities and deliver such impact.
Alira, Toby, you're an ambassador. Where are you from? Where's your mob?
I'm from up north in Queensland. My family's from Mount Morgan, which is just outside of Rockhampton. I actually grew up in Brisbane, but my mum and dad and all my family's from up, so that's pretty cool.
Tell us what the program involves and how you get kids to be involved and what the footy program actually involves.
Yeah, so we do a lot of in-school delivery, actually, and that's, you know, we have classes come to our coaches in school and they do a session with the coaches, and in those sessions we deliver, you know, talks about health and nutrition and healthy ways to live life and choices as well around food, because obviously nutrition is really big, especially with our mob. And then after that, we actually do football. So we just do really fun drills with the kids and, you know, get them to have some fun and run around and have exercise. And then post the sessions, we actually do mindfulness as well. So we get the kids to sit down with us and regulate their breathing before they go back into the classroom, which has been really effective as well. And we provide fruit and meals for the kids as well, especially after school delivery. They get meals, but in school every kid walks away with a fresh piece of fruit as well, which is really important. So we cover a lot of bases, I think, in what we do, but we're obviously very good at it and the kids love it, so we're very lucky.
I imagine you're seeing changes unfold in the lives of these young people right before your eyes, from the first day that they step into a program to advancing further along into that program. What changes are you seeing, and what, you know, what impact is it having on their lives?
I think for me, the biggest change that we see on the ground is the relationships that are formed with our coaches. You know, they have touch points with them every week, and for the kids, you know, coming into the sessions every week, they're seeing the same coaches, and it's just really special to see, you know, from the start they're strangers, and then over time they become, you know, really trusted people in their lives, especially when they're coming to school and the days that they're in their school. So for me, I think it's really about the connection points that we have with the kids, and ultimately that's why we do what we do, right? We want to be helping the kids, and I think being able to have that human connection is so special and important.
What do you love best about your job?
Oh, I could talk about it all day, but I don't know. I just know I love the program. I love football. I grew up playing it. I was pro for 10 years. So, and I always, you know, I love giving back to my community and mob. And so I think just the whole thing is so special. I love, you know, I think one of our stats from the report is 74% of our staff and coaches are actually local Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community members. So I think I just love that we give that pathway, whether it be in school or outside of school. We're delivering on employment and closing gaps across the board. So I think that's what I love, that we're making actual impact change.
Oh, look, it sounds like a wonderful program. Does it operate anywhere in Western Australia yet?
No, we would love to expand, but obviously expansion depends on funding, and if that's something we can secure, I think we would be so effective, and it would be so nice to see it in Perth. And quite frankly, I would love to travel to Perth as well.
Sure you would. And look, you know, it's a big state, what WA, and we've got so many regional and remote communities who would just love to be part of a program. Can you please pass on our best to John Moriarty, an extraordinary man? And I would let people know as well, he has got an autobiography. It's called Saltwater Fella, and it was published back in 2000. You can find out more about John Moriarty and his work and his inspiration to others. But now this life-changing program is just incredible for our young mob, and this is what we need. We need, you know, and all the things you're talking about, Alira, that, you know, you're making sure the kids go home with a piece of fruit. You know, these might seem very little things to some people, but on the whole holistic scheme, it's massive for the future of those kids, isn't it, to have that wraparound service for them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like you said, it seems so basic, but it really does change their lives. And you know, sometimes kids don't have food when they come to school, so the fact that we can provide that is really important, and it's really great that they love coming and they always run up to get their fruit.
Yeah.
And eating it before they leave the session. So it's just so special to see that they enjoy it as much as we enjoy it.
Oh, that is awesome. Look, thank you for having a yarn with us, Alira Toby from the John Moriarty Foundation. You're an ambassador. Shout out to all the kids taking part in that program, and hopefully we'll see you guys in WA one day, okay?
Let's hope so. Thanks for having me.
And to any listeners who would like to find out more, just Google John Moriarty Foundation and you will see all about the amazing program. And it is a life-changing program for our young people. So well done to the foundation. This is the Law Matters program on 100.9 FM Noongar Radio in Perth, nationally through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Coming back shortly to find out all about the youth engagement program run by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. And this is the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Great to find out about the John Moriarty Foundation and how important it is to have programs to involve our young people in and provide that wraparound service. And I'm excited to let you know about the Youth Engagement Program of the Aboriginal Legal Service, which has recently been expanded into Geraldton in Western Australia. Joining me on the line is the statewide manager of YEP, Sasha Greenoff. Sasha, thanks for your time. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Now, for the benefit of our listeners, can you tell them what the Youth Engagement Program is?
Yes, so the Youth Engagement Program started in 2016 in the Perth metro region, and on the back of the success of our program here in Perth, we expanded into the West Kimberley, so Broome and Derby, and then we've now expanded in 2023 all across the Kimberley region, so in Fitzroy Crossing, Halls Creek, Kununurra. And then on the back of our success in the Kimberley region, the Department of Justice has now expanded us into the Geraldton region. So the Youth Engagement Program is a program where in each region, we have local Aboriginal people working with our young people in the criminal justice system, diverting them from the justice system, but also supporting them through the justice process, the youth justice process, and more importantly, supporting them through culturally safe, holistic, individualized support. So that may look like, obviously, the first and foremost is getting them to court, reminding them to court, transporting to court, transporting to youth justice if they've been sentenced to a youth justice order. And then after that is, you know, engaging them back into school, getting birth certificates for them, helping the family or the young person with Centrelink, getting tax file numbers. So it's basically we do whatever we can to support that young person in the community.
Tell us about some of the challenges that our young mob are facing, Sasha, in day-to-day life.
They face a lot of challenges. So in the context of that, I'd say the first and foremost is I'll start with education. You know, some of our young people, you know, a lot of people go on about, oh, kids do need to go to school, but they don't have the understanding of what some kids are actually going through in their home life or in their community life. You know, food security is a huge thing. You know, some kids may not go to school with food, or, you know, feel shame they don't want to go to school because of clothing or whatever that may look like. And I think they need to have a better understanding around the education system. And then also we've got some of our kids have got diagnosed and undiagnosed FASD. So the education system needs to be more supportive around our kids that have those challenges as well. There's lots of challenges that our kids face. And I guess that people who don't work in this space or don't have an understanding of, you know, it's sad that children actually have to come to the justice system before they receive any help. So we're dealing with young people who need help in every area of their life. Oh. Whether that be mental health, whether that be identification, whether that be trying to enroll into school, you know, and school is a huge thing. So when you say what are the challenges, there are a lot of challenges, and there's different topics that I could speak on, but they're the main ones, I guess, from my point of view at this point in time, because I know that we don't have very much time. So I could sit here on the radio and speak all day if I could.
We'll get you back on, don't worry. But Sasha Greenoff is the WA manager of the Youth Engagement Program, which is operated by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, recently expanded into the Geraldton region. So we're looking forward to building on those Yamaji contacts there. You cannot underestimate the importance of a holistic wraparound service, can you, Sasha? And I was going to say, give us a typical day in the life of a YEP worker, but I imagine there's no such thing.
There's no such thing. I always, in training new staff, I always say, we don't come to work and go, okay, from 9 till 12, this is what we're going to do. And so then you go and have lunch, and then from 12 till 5, this is what we're going to do. So each day, our day can change. You know, there could be young people, unfortunately, who've come into police custody, where that will be our number one priority. So a day in the life of a YEP worker, where, you know, I'm so grateful and thankful for every single one of my staff members out in the regions, because they're always out in the community, transporting clients, you know, doing whatever they can to give the clients the best support they can, and ensuring that, you know, first and foremost, you know, getting through the justice system. And I know, especially for, you know, single mums, grandmas who's looking after children, you know, young fathers, single fathers, you know, the overwhelming feeling they have just going to court, you know, and we sit with them at court, we, you know, speak with a lawyer, you know, to have that understanding of the legal jargon. So it takes a load off the families as well.
Sasha, I'm keen to know your views in relation to our young people, because you do have an extensive career working with our young mob, and a lot of people don't get an insight into young people and the issues that they're facing, their families are facing, the local communities are facing. Everybody's talking about Kununurra at the moment, and some stuff that's going on there with our young mob and the police. And I've been absolutely horrified to hear some public opinions on radio and in conversation that people are saying simplistically, well, you need to remove these children. How do you feel when you hear that sort of stuff?
I think it frustrates me, because when we look at Kununurra and the East Kimberley, And I don't know if people know the statistics behind the Department of Communities. There's an 80% removal rate already of Aboriginal children in the East Kimberleys that have been taken away. And now most of these children are being removed and being brought to Perth. So that's one statistic. But to talk about Kununurra as in the present moment, I think that, you know, especially being in my position as the manager for statewide, you know, I'm constantly on the ground listening to elders, listening to families, and listening to their needs. And I bring that to meetings, forums, to let them have an understanding of what it's actually like for them. So I think that, you know, there's a special police force that's currently going to Kununurra for these young people. But it's like, we'll take the time out to actually listen to community. take the time out to listen to the people of the community, listen to what their needs are, you know, because I don't think that they're being heard. So, you know, if they're being heard and if they can actually walk alongside them in change, not tell them, oh, this is what we're going to do in your community without consulting with them, things are never going to change.
We had the WA Governor, Chris Dawson, on the program at the top of the show today, Sash, and he was in Pinjarra apologising to over 300 Noongars for the 1834 massacre at Pinjarra. And it came on the 191st anniversary. But one thing that he did say was that as he's got older, both as governor and in his former capacity as the WA Police Commissioner, he's learnt the importance of listening more and talking less. And I think our lawmakers could learn a lot from that statement.
Yes, definitely. And I guess also listening, you know, us as First Nations people, we're constantly asked to do consultations. We're constantly asked, can we be a part of this report? We're constantly asked, can you attend this meeting? You know, and we've been talking for a very long time. I mean, my elders who came before me have been talking. The elders before, my ancestors have been talking. And, you know, it just seems that no one listens, you know. And until government starts listening and actually listen, then there's not going to be no change.
The youth engagement.
And we're just going to continue to fight, yeah.
Yeah. Sasha Greenoff is my guest, Youth Engagement Program Statewide Manager. The YET program provides holistic, culturally secure, individualised and flexible support to ALS clients appearing in the Perth, Broome, Derby, Kununurra, Wyndham, Halls Creek and Fitzroy Crossing Children's Courts. The support is extraordinary, from mentoring through to transport, referrals, case management, assisting with accommodation. The link goes on. How does someone get hooked up with the Youth Engagement Program? Is it through the court orders?
It's actually through the ALS lawyer. So we cannot receive any referrals from external programs. We can only receive referrals from the ALS lawyer or youth justice if that young person was represented by an ALS lawyer. And when I say ALS lawyer, it has to be the ALS lawyer for the Geraldton Court or the Mullawa Court. Mm. Then you go into Broome, it has to be Broome, Derby, Halls Creek, Kununurra, Wyndham and Fitzroy Crossing. And the Perth Metro, we can only receive referrals from the Perth Children's Court. And, you know, just in saying that, Jodie, it saddens me sometimes because, you know, we obviously want to help all of our First Nations children. But it shouldn't come to a point where they need to come to the justice system to receive the help that they need to get. There needs to be more prevention before they even reach the... Because I had a kid come up to me, he's like, Miss, do I have to be in trouble to get your help?
That's heartbreaking, isn't it? Because it just shows the lack of services that there currently are that could actually be making a difference and stop kids getting involved in the justice system in the first place.
Exactly. And I think, like, in the regions also, you know, this is just my own personal point of view, is that they need to start investing in ACOs. The ACOs that are already in the communities, they need to start investing in ACOs and local people to do the work in their own communities. Because these people in the communities, they know their communities. They know what goes on. So the government needs to start investing more on the ground.
Look, it'll be a life-changing contribution once that happens, but there is obviously merit seen by the WA government in expanding this program into Geraldton so that it's not only operating in Perth but East, West Kimberley, Halls Creek, Fitzroy Crossing and now Geraldton as well. But we've still got a long way to go, haven't we?
Yeah, we've still got a long way to go, but it's exciting, you know, that they've recognised our work. You know, behind the scenes, we work very hard, tirelessly, every single day in ensuring that our children are safe, our children are heard, and that our children know that, you know, they've got somewhere and someone that they can lean on when they need help.
Oh, look, keep up the great work to you and the team. I know that you just work so hard and there's nothing 9 to 5 about what you guys do. Nothing really like Monday to Friday either. You're on the ground running when the stuff needs to be done, and I'm sure it's having life-changing impacts on, you know, so many of our young people. So keep up the great work, and thanks for having a yarn with us on Law Matters, Sasha.
No worries, Freddie. Have a good day.
You too. Sasha Greenoff is the statewide manager of the Youth Engagement Program run through at the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, now expanded into Geraldton as well, into Yamatji country. That wraps up Law Matters for another fortnight. Thank you so much for your company. Thanks for joining me. You take care, and we look forward to your company again in a fortnight's time.